You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Ali Moreno and Stevie Nicol. We'll kick things off by continuing our reflections on what happened at Wembley yesterday. Of course, Brazil beating England by 1-0. It was a disappointing performance from the hosts. England fans not happy. Here's what Gareth Southgate had to say.
I was pleased. Clearly don't like losing football matches, but I thought there were lots of very good individual performances from players who've hardly played for England. I thought our more regular players were very good. With 15 minutes to go, we're thinking, well, we've managed to see a lot of new players. We've had more than our share of the game. We've had as many attempts on goal as they have. So the difference in the end was one moment, really, and that is the ruthlessness of football at this level.
Nina Manura here, and so is Mark Ogden. That sigh wasn't for them, I promise. It was from the comments from my national team manager. All's rosy. Shut up, Mark. How dare you criticise the manager when we lose 1-0?
I've not criticised him, but I will do now if you want. Listen, international friendlies before a major tournament are always hard work, and I was watching the game last night. It was very flat. There was no tempo to it. The crowd was silent. It must have been quite difficult to play in the atmosphere, because when you watch a Premier League game, the intensity is so high, you know that the players are on it 100%. And you're watching that last night, you're thinking, a lot of these players don't want to be there. They're just going through the motions. And, you know, the mistake Harry Maguire made when Brazil almost scored in the first half, some of the... It was just poor. It was just a poor game. And then you hear Gareth Southgate after the game talking like that. And that, it was even flatter than the game itself, the way he was talking then about individuals did really well. Some players did okay. I mean, does anybody care? Does anybody care what happens in a friendly ahead of a major tournament? That's the key for me. It's the major tournament. I think sometimes these games, you're probably better off having a training session for a week just to go through systems, etc. Because playing a friendly, you saw what happened to Kyle Walker. That, for me, Kyle Walker, that could derail Man City's treble bid, because obviously we saw what he did last season against Vinicius Junior in the Real Madrid semi-final. Now, if he misses that game against Real Madrid, if he misses the Arsenal game this weekend, that's a massive blow for Man City. For what? For basically a pointless friendly against Brazil, which was just basically put on to raise money for the FA.
That's a different conversation, by the way.
Let's stick to the a lot of players impress me. Who?
Exactly. I think when he starts his statement, Gareth Southgate, and saying, I thought, I'm very pleased. I think that's a turnoff to everybody that was watching the game from an English perspective. What do you mean? What do you mean it was really good? What do you mean that you had just as many opportunities as Brazil did? The clear opportunities were to Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking at it from the perspective of England, I suppose, but he's ignoring that Paquetá hit the post, that Vini Jr. was in a 1v1 situation and mishits the shot on goal, and that's why Kyle Walker gets an opportunity to clear it off the line. He is conveniently forgetting the many opportunities that Brazil had in this game.
The game as well.
And mind you, this is not your father's Brazil. This is not even your brother's Brazil. This Brazil in Brazil is not even recognized. If you ask just a random, regular fan in Brazil to look at this starting lineup, they'll be like, who's this guy? And who's that guy? And Danilo's still with the national team? Wait. Danilo is the captain of the national team? And so there is context to this conversation, and there is nuance to this conversation that goes well beyond saying, I thought we were good. I thought we carried a lot of the game. I thought there were a lot of good individual performances. It's a lot of generalities, but when you get down to it, England were disappointing. were predictable, were conservative, did not take chances going forward. Brazil were the team that, surprisingly, were the more dynamic, and they were the ones that really created chances going forward.
Gareth Southgate can't believe that, can he?
I don't know. I actually don't know. I think normally you would turn around and say, come on, who are you kidding? But I'm not so sure. You know, I'm kind of stuck in the middle. I understand playing in friendlies. Nobody really enjoys it. Nobody looks forward to it, even though it is against Brazil at Wembley. And so, for me, the manager should do something to make it interesting. He should maybe try something. You know, for example, playing Conor Gallagher beside Declan Rice, we know that going into the tournament, there's going to be two sitting in front of the back four that are going to be defensive-minded. Why don't you try and look a bit further forward and stick Bellingham beside Declan Rice and have Maddison playing, or bring Foden from the wide area and bring him in the middle and try something. And if you lose, it's just a friendly. But again, Harry Maguire. Why are you playing Harry Maguire? So basically, Harry Maguire's going to start in the Euros.
Yep.
I mean, let's be honest. If Lindelof or Johnny Evans were English, would they be in the England squad? I don't think so. But yet, they're probably starting ahead of Maguire and Man United team. I mean, things like that are just, to me, are crazy. And it's a friendly. Try something. Try a new player out at the back. Try and do something in the middle of the park. I mean, you know, you can make it not a waste of time for everybody. Because that's all this was.
Mark, it just feels like same old England with respect to fly-through qualifying, of course, beat the teams they expect to beat. Yet you look at Gareth Southgate's record against, say, the top 10 in the world, and it's poor. It's not good at all. They've lost more than they've won. And you just feel when they come up against any sort of opposition, everyone just kind of shrinks into themselves.
Isn't it? It's the question mark which hangs over this, the Man United story, is whether he's the guy that can take United to a Champions League or a Premier League. I think not, based on what he's done with England, where you're right, you know, France in the World Cup, Croatia in the World Cup, Italy in the Euros. When it comes up to stepping it up against a very good side, against a top coach, he falls short. But I think another issue with England as well, it just feels like a bit of a cosy club, you know. It feels like that lack of criticism, that lack of edge, that his post-match comments were very kind of, oh, well, it was OK. It was like the chief exec, Mark Bullingham, after the World Cup, praising the squad for doing so well to get to the quarterfinals. There's no sense of edge with England. There's no sense of nastiness in the sense that you've got to push harder, you've got to be more ruthless. You know, Jordan Henderson's still in the squad. Why? He's had a terrible season in Saudi Arabia with Ajax. There's a real aversion to trying something that's a risk with England. And for me, that is a problem. The England team and the Football Association, the FA, they're very, very safe and conservative, and that doesn't win you trophies. And when it comes to the Euros this summer, you know, England have got a really good chance, but we're kind of overlooking the prospect of a team emerging from outside the pack of favourites that could knock England out before the semi-finals. Everybody's talking about France in the semi-finals, etc., etc. Well, if it is France in the semi-finals, England aren't going to win the Euros because England can't beat a team like France because they haven't got the quality. And I don't see anything in Southgate in what he does, what he
but
says,
Mark,
the tactics
Mark,
he
they
picks,
do have the quality, the though. Don't that, this is the problem. They do have the quality. They do have the quality, sort of players there that should be able to go toe-to-toe with someone like France.
Absolutely, but they don't have the quality of coach to put them in a winning kind of formation or with the tactics that you need, with the boldness that you need. You know, if Jose Mourinho or Thomas Tuchel, for instance, were given the England manager's job now, I'd bat them to win the Euros because they'd have a coach that would press the right buttons in the right situations. He would go for broke. He would be bold. He would be ruthless. And I don't see Southgate having that. Southgate is great for good old England. Gets to the quarterfinals, do well, you know, play some nice football, whatever. But they don't win anything. And I don't think Gareth Southgate will win anything with this team because when it comes to the crunch, he reverts back to his cautious, conservative self. And that allows the opposition to come in and win the games and, you know, passes off the pitch like Croatia did and Italy did. I just don't see Gareth Southgate getting past that. And in many ways, this great squad that England have got, this great set of talent, it could be a wasted legacy, really. If Gareth Southgate remains as coach, I don't think he's the guy to take it forward. Nice guy, Gareth Southgate. I think we all like the guy as he is, but I don't think he's a coach. He's not an elite coach. If he was a club manager, he wouldn't be in the top 10 in the Premier League, unless he gets the Man United job, bizarrely. But I don't think he's got those credentials.
And that's my point about Bellingham, trying Bellingham. You know, Gareth Southgate told us that the difference was one opportunity in this game. And he's always talking about the margins are so small. Well, the reason that, one of the reasons you could say that him and his team don't ever get past that final hurdle is because they don't try and get that extra little edge because of the way he plays the game. You know, if you start Bellingham there, the only thing you know is he's going to try and get in the box regardless of where he is.
But isn't that a little negative in itself? Because Bellingham has been playing well in that world from here.
No, listen to what I'm saying.
Why don't you play Maynou in front of the back four and that gives Declan Rice the freedom to play more forward? Why do you have to play a double pivot?
But if you listen to my point, the one thing you know about Bellingham is he's going to get forward. So you're going to end up getting something forward, and you're still going to have a little bit of defensive stability.
As opposed to
having Conor Gallagher or Calvin Phillips alongside Declan Rice, where you've just got two guys who are going to sit
but
there.
Why can't Maynou do what Jorginho's doing for Arsenal, which gives Rice the freedom?
You're going to turn around and start throwing this on Maynou and say, Maynou's going to be the difference between winning the Euros. I don't think
I'm saying I don't think playing Bellingham further back is a constructive way of going forward. I understand what you're saying.
You know when you used to play 4-4-2? Mm. You had two midfielders. One would sit, the other one would help out defensively and get forward. That's exactly what he would do. You'll also have a Maddison or a Foden in the middle as well, which means that you're going to get forward. And I'm looking for the edge that Gareth Southgate's talking about, because according to him, it's a little edge that's the difference. There's one example of where you could get an edge.
Nadim has got his technical problems fixed. Nadim, Gareth Southgate, do you like or not?
Yeah, I like him, to be honest. I think it's funny listening to the guys, because obviously we can overreact to this and, you know, they could win the game on Tuesday 4-0 and we'll say it doesn't matter as well. But I think in terms of the style of play and the way he spoke after the game, I don't think it was a great game for England at all. But off the top of my head, like, I don't remember tons of games like that where they've actually had a bad game. I think at times they've sort of underwhelmed, but realistically, I don't think it's that bad. And as I look at that team, you know that that's not going to be the team that will start the tournament, even for as conservative as I think he can be and he tends to lean into. You're still seeing Kane go in there, you're seeing Saka go in there. I'm going to see probably more of an attacking midfield, I would say, because as he says himself, like that role of a number six in England, he knows that there aren't too many who can do that role particularly well. So I think in some ways he'll play to his strengths when the time is needed. And he's trying to look at a few different things, people in different positions like Gordon, like Watkins getting a chance to play. But that's not the team that's going to be playing for England come the Euros. And to put it into perspective, we can overreact to this. But at the same time, Julien Laurent's magnificent France, they lose at home to Germany, who lose to everyone. So, you know, they're just having just a better moment this weekend as, say, England did. But I think the concerns about Maguire and so on, yes, you could address those, some of the mistakes at the back. But the fact is, for England, they do win a lot of games. Yes, they might struggle in that final stage, but so does every team barring one, which tends to be France in recent memory.
The defence for England cannot be, France lost to Germany, so therefore we're okay. that cannot be the argument. I will say...
It's perspective. Oh, no, that's not the argument. No. That's not the argument. I'm saying if we're going to overreact... Let's overreact to everything.
But
then.
I don't think we're missing the point. Well, first of all, we'll get to that conversation in due time.
Well, we did it yesterday.
Okay, so we are not getting to that conversation any longer. All I'm suggesting is that this is not an overreaction, I don't believe, because it's a conversation that we have regularly about Gareth Southgate and about England. And why is it not an overreaction? Why it's actually a reaction to what they're doing is because it continues to be the pattern of this team. And we could focus on one individual player and say, well, he doesn't perform as well with the national team as he does with his club team. There's been thousands of players like that. But when you see a lot of the players from England not doing the same or having the same sort of performances that they have for their club teams, then you sort of have to look for a pattern. You have to find a commonality, and that commonality is Gareth Southgate. So if you want to find the contrast and the context of this conversation, look at the rotation in the attacking half from Brazil, and look at the movement, the freedom of movement, and the flexibility of movement of guys like Vini Jr., who starts on the left-hand side, but most of his dangerous play happening running in behind on the inside shoulder of the outside back or splitting the center backs. Who in England was doing that? Finding flexibility of movement, rotation of movement, appearing in different places in the attack. Nobody. That doesn't exist. And so that's my point. It's not an overreaction per se. It's just looking at a team that does exactly the same thing over and over again, regardless of the personnel, that doesn't have a whole lot of rotation and creativity in the attack and therefore becomes very predictable in moments that truly matter. We're talking at the highest level. We're talking at the elite level of competition. And so if indeed they're going to be able to achieve what they think they're capable of achieving, they're going to have to be willing to take some chances. And part of taking chances is being finding variety and creativity in the attack.
Nathan, if you look at someone like Phil Foden, very much in the conversation as one of the best players in the Premier League at the moment, we don't see that. Well, we certainly haven't seen it, have we, in an England shirt of late? You look at yesterday and it wasn't there.
No, it wasn't there. You're right. And it's fair to criticise the performance. And I think, you know, the point that Ali's making, say about Brazil, you see in Vinicius Junior, Rodrigo, people like that. You know, these, unless I'm wrong, these are starters for Brazil. I think at England there, you've seen Watkins, you've seen Gordon. And that's not really a combination you see very often. I think if you throw in a Kane in there, someone on that left-hand side, the link-ups are a bit different. I think even for Phil Foden, for as much as he can play high and wide, I think his best version of himself is when there's a fullback who will go all the way on that side and thus allow him to come inside, get more touches in around the box, affect the game, link up with Bellingham, link up with Kane. But, you know, that wasn't going to be the case yesterday, especially with Kyle Walker coming off so early. And in fairness to Konsa, like, he can play right back for Villa, but in my opinion, you know, he's a centre-back. So that's not the best version of what they can do. And yes, Foden has struggled at times for England, but you can see the potential. And how many of us really would be surprised if at certain points in this tournament coming up, the midfield would be a Rice, it would be a Bellingham, and it would be a Foden. You know, that's a way to link up those guys. Mm. And having a Kane ahead of that as well, I think you'll see the best attacking version of England. But maybe there is a concern about it getting hit on the break. But, you know, going into the late stages of the tournament, maybe there'll only be certain teams that can do that. So, yes, people don't necessarily perform to their best. But as Mark said at the very start, a friendly game at Wembley is always a really weird atmosphere. And I think that transferred onto the pitch, especially with some of the stars being out. And it led to, you know, what was a bad performance for them, but not something which, in my opinion, happens that often.
An easily forgettable game then for England. The same can't be said for Brazil, and in particular, Endrick. Mm. What a time to get your first goal for Brazil. Of course, the man who's heading to Real Madrid in the summer.
Yeah, and one of the things that we've mentioned about Brazil lately is that there seems to be a gap and a shortage in talent compared to what they have been in the past. Now, the goal, per se, is a tap-in from my kind of range, so that in itself is not the important part. The important part is the fact that he continues his run, he makes a tap-in, he scores a game-winning goal at Wembley, and while Nathan and Mark want to devalue the importance of scoring a goal at Wembley, I'd say that, yeah, this is one of the most important stadiums in the world, and it is significant for Brazil, and it is significant for a 17-year-old to do that in that sort of stage. In terms of what it means for the future for Endrick in this national team, again, there is a space there and a gap for somebody to be able to fill that gap. Because outside of Vini Jr., outside of perhaps Rodrigo, then you start searching, you're kind of going, is it Rafinha? Is it Richarlison? And they're not exactly overwhelming in terms of their performance, their productivity, the talent level. Can Endrick be that guy into the future that gets Brazilian fans excited once again?
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match
with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Meanwhile, fans aren't particularly excited from a Manchester United perspective about the possibility of Gareth Southgate leaving England in the summer and then taking the reins at Old Trafford. But he remains a huge favourite at 6-4, 8-1 for the likes of Tuchel, Lopetegui, Potter and Emery. Oh, Jose Mourinho return, why not?
Hey.
10-1. Mark, you've got to laugh at some fans because it's ridiculous. They're saying if Gareth Southgate is hired, they're never going to support Manchester United again.
Well, that's probably a good thing. They're probably the fans you don't want to follow your club. But look, I think we all know that the reason Gareth Southgate is in the frame for the Man United job is not because of his purely his track record as a coach or a manager. It's because the new people at United, the new people that are running the club in terms of the football side, they have a relationship with Southgate. Dan Ashworth does. He worked with him before at the FA. Dave Brailsford also knows Southgate well from working together in the past. So in many ways, it kind of fits their blueprint for going forward. But ultimately, his record as a coach does not merit him being linked with a Man United job. It doesn't. It just, you know, I don't think we can look at his past with Middlesbrough 15 years ago. That's a long time ago. But with England, he hasn't done enough to suggest that he's the guy that's going to go toe-to-toe with Pep Guardiola or Jurgen Klopp or whoever it is next season and win a Premier League or win a Champions League. He's just not that guy. So I can see why Man United fans aren't happy about it, even prior to the England defeat against Brazil. I mean, listen, we live in a knee-jerk society whereby, you know, somebody's great or really bad. But I think with Southgate, I think he's always middle of the road. And that's what he is. He's middle of the road in everything he does. And I don't think he will ever be a Man United manager, but he could be the Man United manager by the end of the summer because that is what people at the club are interested in doing.
He was, of course, asked about it, wasn't he, ahead of the Brazil game, and he said it was disrespectful to talk about it, given, of course, that Ten Hag is in charge. What did you make of that, Mark?
Well, I mean, that's just naive, isn't it? I mean, come on, he's been a manager for 20 years, and the guys will tell you that, you know, in football, managers change jobs long before managers leave their jobs. I mean, you know, Jose Mourinho was lined up long before Louis van Gaal went, and this is what happens. This is what happens in the game, so I don't know who he suggested was being disrespectful. Are we being disrespectful by talking about it? And Man United being disrespectful by looking for a new manager? Is he being disrespectful by, you know, allowing his name to be linked with the United job by not ruling it out? Because he didn't rule it out. He just gave a kind of a bland PR statement saying that it's not the right thing to do. But nobody's being disrespectful. It's just the nature of football. It's the nature of any business that people look to be replaced and they find somebody to replace them before they make the replacement. I don't know what he's trying to say there, because ultimately, that's how football works. It's always worked that way, and it always will.
Can I ask a stupid question, Stevie?
Oh, here we are.
Yeah, go on.
If you were Gareth Southgate, would any part of you see this and be like, do you know what? It's not worth it.
I'd have to think so. I mean, how many managers go into a job and they walk through the door knowing the people there don't want you?
Yeah.
I mean, straight off the bat, you're up against it. And I know what Augie's talking about, well, they know him and they're comfortable with it. When did that ever be a criteria for getting the right guy in charge of a bunch of players? That shouldn't be the criteria. The criteria should be, who can we bring in that is going to liven this lot up and get them on some sort of path forward whilst we organise to get better players? That should be the criteria. Not, we know him, he's a solid citizen, he'll say the right things like he did in this press conference, so he's our man. That makes no sense.
Does it resonate with the players at all the noise around this as well, Nathan? For example, if he does get hired?
I don't know, to be honest. I think from a United standpoint, I could be speaking out of turn here, but you don't get the feeling that, say, lots of the United players currently are sort of really in love with a Ten Hag. And then you look at some of the England players who are there at United and they enjoy their time away with England. So it's not to say that you know, he's destined to be a success because he appears to be nice and so on. But I'm sure for some of those guys, they're probably quite keen for a change. And I think the thing about Southgate is we only see the outside image. Nobody knows what it would be like on a day-to-day basis. And I think, you know, it's, in my opinion, it's fair to say that managers over time, you know, they do change. And the last time he was in club management was a while ago. So maybe there'll be some lessons that he'll be taking on board should he go there, which would benefit him. But it's fair to say that quite a lot of people aren't having Gareth Southgate as a manager at all. So it does leave this sort of awkward feeling. But realistically, for United, like, what do you want? When you show the list of all those favourite managers there, like, what do the fans want? What do the public want? What do we want from somebody standing on the touchline at Old Trafford? Because I don't think many of those sort of names that were listed there would be the type of thing which they'd be desperate for.
Yeah, what do you want, Mark, in life?
Well, listen, the last thing a football club should do is listen to the fans. I mean, when they're choosing a manager, that is the road to ruin in many ways, because the fans want something that is just idealistic and you know, fantasy almost. I think that the people that are making the decision have to make the decision for the right reasons. My concern would be that they're making a choice when they don't really know how to make a decision. You know, Dave Brailsford and Jim Ratcliffe haven't really picked a manager before. Dan Ashworth has worked in the technical side at the FA. He didn't really choose the manager at Newcastle. He went after, you know, Eddie Howe arrived. So, you know, they're all these question marks. And ultimately, they have to get the guy who's going to win things, like they say. But, you know, Stevie was saying about, you know, you go for the guy that's going to shape things up. A lot of owners now, they don't want people to shape things up. They want people to nod along. I mean, you know, look at Chelsea when Thomas Tuchel was dismissed after about 2 months of the new ownership. Club owners want people to do what they are basically told. They don't want a disruptor. And that is the danger, that if United don't want a disruptor, they want a diplomat, then Gareth Southgate is perfect. He's not a disruptor. He's the ultimate diplomat. But it's Man United, and I don't think he could turn the job down because he's worried about what some fans think, because it's still the biggest club in the biggest league in the world. Sorry, Stephen, but it is. And it's a massive job. And if you're offered the Man United job, you can't turn it down because a few people on Twitter don't like you.
Well, Stevie wouldn't be here if that was the case. just a reminder, Manchester United in action against Coventry in the FA Cup. That'll be live for you on April the 21st. We're at the semi-final stages, live from Wembley. Naden will be there, I'm sure, at 10 a.m. Eastern. Of course, the day before on the Saturday, it's City against Chelsea. Meanwhile, we're at the last lap now, aren't we, of Jurgen Klopp in charge at Liverpool. What an extraordinary impact he has had on the club, of course, leading them to quite a bit of silverware, but in particular, that first Premier League title in 30 years. Naden and Mark are still with us. Naden, what's interesting is that you spent quite a bit of time, whether you like it or not, at Liverpool over the years, sideline reporting, chatting to Klopp, chatting to the players. How much of an impact within the club, not necessarily just on the pitch, but off it, will Klopp's departure have?
Ooh, that's a good question. And you know, ultimately, for me, I think it will be massive, because when you look at the amount of time that he's been there, it's fair to say that his character has been spread all around that training ground, all around the football club, even from the way that the players approach coming onto the field, the way that they'll sort of celebrate with the fans afterwards. You know, his identity is a huge part of this era for Liverpool. So for him to go, like, do you carry on those same traditions? Do you do the same things with the fans afterwards when the next person comes in? Or is it a case of, well, that's the old guy, we need to move that to the side? Even maybe little training habits, the way he sort of looks after his players on a one-to-one basis, the connections with, say, academy and so on, the connections with the staff, the media team, like all that idea of someone coming in and all that being new, I'm sure it could work out to be great. But for these guys, they've gotten very used to working with one of the best managers in the Premier League era. And I think, as you've shown from the stats there as well, I am guilty of this, because Liverpool obviously a very historic club, and you know, some people could argue, like Mark, whether it's the biggest job or the second biggest job in England, who knows? But the trophy record that they had before Jurgen Klopp came in, it's always a reminder that Liverpool that we see today were not the Liverpool that were there before him. Mm-hmm. Yes, there were times when they're doing well, they're successful, the Gerrard slip era and all that stuff, but it wasn't like they were contending for titles, or we almost expected them to every single year. So he's changed something there, whether it's the belief, the quality, the setup, everything about that football club. And even though it is Liverpool, it's Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool. So for that to disappear, like, what did it look like? We know what the team's going to look like, but what is the club like and what the team going to play like going forward?
Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, like it was Arsene Wenger's Arsenal and Alex Ferguson's Manchester United, Oggy. Focusing on Fergie and his departure, what can Liverpool learn from that and where it's all gone wrong from United since to make sure that history doesn't repeat itself, 50 miles away?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Liverpool have already taken steps to avoid that. They have got an experienced brains trust in terms of picking the new coach. Obviously, Michael Edwards has come back, but I think the people, the senior people at Liverpool are more qualified to make the right choice than they were at United, because obviously Sir Alex Ferguson went and David Gill, the chief exec, went at the same time, and you had a lot of inexperience coming in. And I think also United ended up with probably their sixth or seventh choice with David Moyes when they missed out on lots of other managers. It was left too late. Sir Alex Ferguson told them too late. Jurgen Klopp has given them probably 6 months' notice. You know, he told them in November. So Liverpool have been working all that time to find new managers. So the advantages are already built in. You know, the time they've had to plan, the people at the club that are making the decision. But, you know, Nadum's right. You know, I can't think of any manager during the Premier League era that has had such a presence at a club than Klopp. You know, more than Fergie, more than Wenger, more than Guardiola, because everybody at Liverpool looks up to Klopp. The fans, the players, the staff. He's got this massive presence. And when he's not there, they'll really feel that. And I think, no matter who comes in, you know, Xabi Alonso is a different type of character. You know, he's not as expressive, or he's not as a bigger personality as Klopp. His team's play a different way. Roberto De Zerbi is another guy that's very close, I think, to the job as well. I'm told that he wants the job, but whether he'll get it is a different matter. He's also a character, but he's not quite as, he hasn't got that kind of same personality as Klopp. So you're replacing a personality as well as a manager, and that's a difficult thing, because the team might win, but you have to kind of have that bond with the fans as well. And I think Klopp is irreplaceable in many ways. You know, we talk about United being a big job, but I think this summer, replacing Klopp is harder than going in at Man United, because you've got to replace this massive figure that's delivered success, but also created this immense personality at the club where everybody loves him, and that is very unusual in football.
You know, for me, it's two things. You certainly shouldn't be trying to get a clone of anybody.
Sure.
Whether it's Klopp or anybody
else.
You
can't.
Well, you can't. But whoever you pick, you have to know that as soon as they come in the door, they demand respect. And if you add the recruitment onto that, then there is no reason why you won't continue to be successful. You know, I mean, look at when Shankly left, you're talking about a guy who had the same effect as Klopp. And you couldn't have got a polar opposite in Bob Paisley, but he demanded respect.
Right.
And the recruitment was good. And then it followed through all the way through Kenny. Then they get Souness, demanded respect, but the recruitment was wrong. And from there, that's when it starts to go. So a lot of it is down to the recruitment. But if you can get the guy that demands respect
just
and receives
it. Take us a little deeper. What do you mean by demands respect? How do you go about that? Is that an instant thing? Like, what happens?
Well, Klopp has everybody on the toes. You know, whenever Klopp appears in the training room, the dining room, wherever it may be, everybody sits up a little straighter. Regardless of whether they all think he's his friend, because it's almost like he's everybody's friend. But I'll tell you what, that when I say demand respect, they might like him, they might love him, they might think he's funny. But I'll tell you what, when he opens his mouth about football, they hang on every single word he says, and they completely respect him. And so if you can get somebody who carries that, if you can get your recruitment right, then you can carry on being successful.
It's quite a unique situation, isn't it? Because normally when a manager comes in, things are down, things are low. But whoever it is that comes in, be it Xavi Alonso, you look at it and you're like, well, Klopp didn't used to do that. Or Klopp wouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. Or Klopp would have got a win there.
So break for an impact here, Stevie, because you're not going to enjoy this too much. The absence and the departure of Jurgen Klopp will have a similar effect than the departure of a guy like Diego Simeone would at Atletico Madrid. It leaves that kind of void. It leaves that kind of space, an empty space that now has to be filled in with a guy that may demand the respect, that may bring the correct recruitment, that may have the correct structure in terms of the players that are coming in, and yet there are intangibles there that generate a connection and a sense of belief within a group that Klopp has been able to do, that Simeone has been able to do, that has given Liverpool a certain identity and a certain level of character, the same way that it has happened at Atletico Madrid. And guess what? As they both leave, whenever they both leave, that empty space, you can't just manufacture it. And that connection that Jurgen Klopp now has with all his players, this guy that comes in is going to try to recreate that, and it's not there. You're going to have to build that from square one, and it's difficult to do because you're trying to manufacture something on the foundation that somebody else has built. And that's tough. That's tough. And by the way,
my argument is that Liverpool did that for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a given that somebody as influential as Klopp, when he walks out the door, the thing's going to collapse or whatever.
Mm.
I mean, it's not. You can't. It's about getting somebody who has that respect straight away. And you don't do the same things. You don't. If you're not one of these guys running about doing all this, then you don't do it. But it takes a different type of character, but a strong character. And if you get the recruitment right, there is no reason.
But history has told us, isn't it? Like, Arsene Wenger leaves, Unai Emery comes in, that doesn't work out. Obviously, we've seen the disaster that is at Manchester United. History has taught us that in the past that with someone with their fingerprints all over a club who leaves, it's very, very difficult to continue that success with the next manager.
I don't disagree, which is why I keep going on about the recruitment. I think if you look at all of those clubs that you just mentioned that went down the pan, well, not quite down the pan, you look at the players they started bringing in compared to what was going on before. And that's why I use Liverpool as a comparison. Mm. OK, I know it's a long time ago, but they did it for four managers on the trot. And the reason it kept going is because that respect was there and the recruitment was there.
And part of the recruitment, though, is because you have a guy like Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah.
And players talk. And the idea of playing for a guy like Jurgen Klopp. In fact, all of us that are very removed from the game would love to have had the chance to play for a guy like Jurgen Klopp. It just feels like that's the sort of guy that you want to play for. Well, that's the next guy is not Jurgen Klopp. And so it changes the conversation. Whether we like it or not, it changes the conversation. It doesn't mean that it's going to fail, but it changes the dynamics and it changes the conversation.
It's fascinating, isn't it, Aidan?
Absolutely is. And I think, thinking about it now, like with whoever comes in, I think a lot will come down to, say, the leaders that are at Liverpool, the ones who've been with Klopp for that longest time, because if they sort of set the tone, in my opinion, and follow along with the next manager, give them their best, buy into everything that they're saying, then yes, I think that transition becomes that little bit easier. And I'm with Stevie, really. Like, Klopp's leaving Liverpool in a great position, far better than, you know, what we saw of Sir Alex Ferguson when he was leaving United. And yes, they won a league title, but you could see that they were kind of heading in the other direction. But I always think this Liverpool job is going to be really enticing. But I think for that new person, I think it's about finding that sort of balance. You don't want to be the person, in my opinion, that comes in and tries to disrupt everything that Klopp did. But then in the same breath, you can't fake it and try and be everything that he was. Like, if they recruit correctly, and given the fact that they've had since November to do it, then yes, there's a likelihood that they'll bring in the right person that will suit those players, that will suit the culture at the football club. And one thing I've seen from going to Anfield is that I think the fans will get right behind them and they'll give them a chance, give them time. And with the team that they have, maybe that time that they need won't be as long as, say, it was going to be elsewhere, like at places like Manchester United.
Who's going to be in charge then at the start of the season, Mark?
Do you know something? Michael Edwards going back is a really significant move because I think it could be a surprise. I think Alonso is obviously the fans' favourite and he ticks all the right boxes, but I think Michael Edwards is going to go for something different. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Roberto De Zerbi. I think De Zerbi ticks more boxes for Liverpool than Alonso does, apart from the fact that Alonso's a club legend. But obviously Bayern Munich is a strong in for Alonso. They keep telling us that. You know, Uli Hoeneß has said it this week. I think De Zerbi is a really good shout for Liverpool, even though he's probably second favourite right now behind Xabi Alonso.
Why is Michael Edwards a big deal for those who don't follow this, Mark?
Well, Michael Edwards is the guy that, you know, he brought Jurgen Klopp to the club back in 2015. But as Stevie talks about recruitment, he's the guy that has made Liverpool the best in terms of recruitment in the big clubs in the world. You know, he left for a couple of years, he's now back, but he was the guy that signed the likes of Mo Salah, Alisson Becker. You know, Jurgen Klopp wanted he wanted Julian Brandt, I think, from Borussia Dortmund, and he was told, no, don't go for Brandt, go for Mo Salah. So people like Salah, Andy Robertson got from Hull, Gini Wijnaldum. Michael Edwards knew about all these players and brought them in on low fees, got them to the club, and, you know, he was the architect of Klopp's success. Klopp was the heartbeat to it, but without Michael Edwards and the kind of scouting network he set up, you know, Michael Edwards has a very small scouting team, but he trusts the scouts he's got. Man United's got a massive one. They've got too many scouts. Michael Edwards is, I've been told, that he's one of the most connected people in the game. He knows the players that are coming through, the coaches that are coming through. He can pick up a call to this guy, to that guy. He knows 6 months before everybody else who the players are and who the coaches are, which is why I think that he'll pull a rabbit out of a hat with a coach and it will be a surprise. It won't be Xabi Alonso, but we'll wait and see. But I think Edwards is very key to this in the sense that he is the guy that Liverpool have brought back because they know he's good. They know he's the best in the world at what he does.
If it's a De Zerbi-shaped rabbit, how would you feel, Stevie?
I don't have a problem with that. I like the way he plays the game. And he's going to inherit players who want and like to play and have been successful at playing not unlike the way he likes to play the game. So, you know, from that point of view, I think it makes complete sense.
Where are you going this week, Mark?
I'm going to Wembley on Tuesday. Nothing adventurous this week, just to Wembley to watch a fantastic friendly with England and Belgium.
There we go, good. Change your tone. Thank you very much, Mark. Maiden will be back on Extra Time, which is always available on our YouTube channel. Yam was in a sauna yesterday. Be sure to check
nice.
It out.
Yeah. Is it warm?
Yeah, clothes on. That's a good start.
Oh, that was good.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Just a reminder, La Liga returns this week. Friday, Cadiz taking on Granada. Then Saturday, Montjuic, Barcelona take on Las Palmas. And then on Sunday, big game at Santiago Bernabeu, Real Madrid against Athletic Club. Just a reminder, all those games live on ESPN+. Bundesliga, of course, a highlight, no doubt about it. It's the Klassiker. March the 20th, that's next Saturday. Bayern taking on Borussia Dortmund. Bayer Leverkusen with a chance to stretch the lead. It would be 13 points, wouldn't it, Ali, if they beat Hoffenheim?
Yes.
That game is at 10:30 Eastern on ESPN+. Plus, the coverage starts with the Klassiker at 12:30. It'll be an hour-long preview ahead of the big game. Meanwhile, record-setting goal in Austria. Yesterday, this is against Slovakia. Take a look at the clock. Baumgartner with the goal after just 5 seconds.
Wow, right up the plate. Got a question, the goalkeeper.
Fastest ever goal in international play.
That's horrendous.
You usually play the ball back and settle into the match. He decides to go for a dribble. Everybody's backing up. He says, you know what, I'll take the chance as well.
The goal from there, Florian Wirtz yesterday as well. Reminds me of San Marino against David Seaman. Do you remember that, Stevie? That was early doors.
Good pierce, made a mess,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. But that wasn't 5 seconds. Goodness gracious me, that was a quick goal, wasn't it? Very exciting. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Nadim is back, Stevie and Ali here as well to answer your questions. Welcome in then to the latest edition of ESPN SC. It's Extra Time. It's not the start of the show, it's Extra Time. Welcome to Extra Time. Ali's here.
You're right.
It's an international weekend, isn't it? Nadim joins us. How are you, Nadim? Have you had a weekend off? What have you done with yourself?
Yeah, weekend off for me. Taking it easy, yeah. Enjoy these international breaks.
Glad someone does. Dan, how much trash talking has your wife been doing since the game yesterday? She's, of course, Brazilian. I don't know, she doesn't really mention it that much. That was all right. An incident with a tree. So that dominated the conversation yesterday. For the boys, Southgate is getting hammered by the pundits about his lack of imagination and restrictive coaching that is stifling a talented England squad. What should he do differently to make them more dynamic? We heard Stevie, didn't we, maybe say playing Bellingham a little bit further back and then having some like Madison or Foden in the centre, a little further up. What do you think, Nathan?
No, I think I don't mind Stevie's idea, to be honest. But I just think, like, overall, everyone's, like, clamouring to have Southgate play this really attacking style of international football. But how many international teams really play with that many attackers? How many teams play with, like, such an immense fluidity like we see in sort of, like, club football? The answer for me is not too many. I think it's just the nature of that sort of level of football itself. You play with some of the best attackers, you play against some of the best defenders, some of the best minds in coaching are there as well, and they structure it to make it as difficult as they can be for these competitions. So I think he's got good attacking power. I think he'll use it, and just think this is so far along compared to when he was playing a back five and he basically had three people up top. I think he's got the creativity. I think he'll use it, and I think England will be fine this summer as well.
Always optimistic, Nathan. Nathan, Calvin Phillips seems to have lost his place in both City and England squads. If Leeds get promoted in the Premier League, do you think he should go back there to regain his form?
I'm going to say no. Overall, I'm of the mentality to never really go back. And even though, you know, he might have a chance to play more so at City next year, maybe, perhaps. But I just don't think going to Leeds would be necessarily be the best thing for him. Like, he could maybe have that home bond and home connection, but I think he's a player who could play to a higher standard in the team, who potentially be fighting relegation next season.
I don't know why this question has been put in. John Barnes said in an interview before the recent Liverpool Legends game against Ajax that English players let themselves go more so than Europeans after retirement. Is there some truth to it? Steve will say he's not English, so why don't we just say British players?
Bit of pot, isn't it? I don't think it's a conscious effort to let yourself go per se. I think that the era of players that Barnsley was involved in, we didn't eat and drink and look after ourselves the way players do today. Mm. And so when you stop playing and you still continue to eat and drink all the things that we did, it's a lot easier to put weight on and not be quite as healthy, because when you're training, you get rid of all that stuff, which is why you were able to do it. And the Europeans didn't have the culture that we had of...
I think it's too generic to say all the British are fatties and the Europeans are fine.
No, but you can...
Because, like...
I think you can do what I've just done, though, and look at it. If that is the case, I'm not saying it is or it isn't, but there's a lot to be said for the fact that our eating and drinking habits were a little different to the Europeans. And, of course, if you carry that on when you're not training, then you probably would tend to get a little heavier and whatnot.
There are some Europeans who are heavy now that you could point to, but I don't feel that's a good idea.
Wesley Snyder?
Well, yes. Van der Vaart. Nate, have we been told you're pulling some funny faces? Is that just normal?
No, it's just another very interesting John Barnes take. But, yeah, I'll leave that one alone. Next question, please.
Oh...
But he's not short of a few takes, Barnsley, is he? Let's be honest.
But to your point, Stevie, I think you develop certain habits over the course of decades.
Yes.
Playing the game. And if those habits were bad to begin with, they're not going to improve when you retire.
No.
It's just a logical...
I can attest to that, yes. Yeah.
There hasn't been a whole lot of improvement in this area. So, I mean, it's about the habits that you had when you were young and the foundations that you had then. And if those things carry on, then, well, you know.
Ali, have you seen someone who at first didn't look like a football player and then he worked hard and became a great player?
There's a guy that played for Paraguay, last name Ortigosa. This man did not, in any way, shape, or form, look like a player at a national team level. And yet, you couldn't possibly get the ball away from him.
Really?
Now, people may not be familiar with that name, so I'll give you another one. El Pibe Valderrama. You look at Carlos Valderrama and you kind of go, no, no. But then you put the ball in his feet. First of all, you can't get the ball away from him. He is strong, built like a tree, tree trunks for legs, can push him off the ball. And while he looks like he's jogging, or he was jogging half of the time, slowly jogging, not even at a quick jog, slowly jogging, somehow he always found himself in an open space. And guess what? One and two touches, and that ball was putting you through on goal. Great player. Did not look like a player, but was one of a kind.
He was weird, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You talk about a guy that looked one pace.
Yeah.
I don't remember him ever getting caught on the ball.
Really?
Aye. I don't remember anybody ever tackling him. When I see Valderrama in my head, I just see a guy knocking the ball around.
Yeah.
Like, as if it's just a knockabout.
What about players for you who didn't look like players?
Tell you what, Paul and I did the All-Star game in Toronto.
Oh, I know who you're going to say.
Blanco.
Cuauhtémoc Blanco, absolutely.
Seriously, right?
So the first... Is he still playing?
I don't think so.
He's been playing for a long time, isn't he?
I don't think so. I hope not.
The first training session we had, so everybody's trotting out, and I'm like, all right, Paul, look at the state of that guy. I mean...
He waddles.
He looked as though he could barely walk, never mind run around and play football. And so we did a warm-up, and then we did a couple of little drills, and he still looked a bit... And then we did this finishing exercise. And he's waddled up to this ball, and I'm thinking, A, how's he going to kick this? And B, how's he going to reach the goal? He rammed this thing in the top corner, and the two of us just looked at each other and went like, ah, how do you do that? Yeah. And then from there,
yeah,
gone. I mean, just everything was... He looked about as stylish as... It's, if somebody said, do not look stylish, he's your man.
Right.
I'll tell you what, for product, end product, absolutely frightening. Just perfect passes, perfect weight, put in the perfect place, and when it came to striking a goal, I'll put it in that one, and that one. I'll pick this one today and then stick it in the top corner. Unbelievable.
Retired at 43.
Yeah, I just, but look, unathletic, I mean, everything about him, scream, everything except professional soccer player, and yet he was so very effective.
Fantastic.
Nathan?
Yeah, I've got two slightly different ones. I think one of them, for me, is like David Silva. If you put him in a suit, you could definitely call him tech support, but then you put him out on the field, he's a magician. And then the other one is Adel Taarabt. So Adel, when I played with him, was not in the best of shape. And if you just saw him sitting around, you thought, this isn't it. But then when he's out on the field, his talent level was so high, and obviously at this time he wasn't necessarily the most professional, but some of the ability he has and technique and stuff, it's as good as players that have played with at City and elsewhere. But yeah, at that point he just didn't really look like football was something which he was doing 24/7, let's just say that.
What was that first training session with David Silva like, Nathan?
Yeah, he's just a magician. We were doing the rondos, and all of a sudden, like, I'd been at Old City, there were some good players and so on, and then here's this guy that just would not give the ball away. And I think for myself, as everyone knows, I'm, you know, slightly sort of bigger than, say, most of the players I'd be playing against. Try and get the ball off this little fella that's half your weight and half your size. With him, it was impossible. You just saw a different game, and he'd just been manipulating you the whole time. And it was the first time at City that you were seeing someone who had that sort of ability. And yeah, like I say, he does look like you could also call him up for tech support, but what a player, honestly.
Taarabt is one of the players. I don't think there's been a player that has had as many former teammates say the same thing that Nathan said about him.
Yeah.
As this guy. Every single person that ever kicked the ball with this guy, whether it's a manager or a coach or a player, says that for ability, he was absolutely untouchable at times.
Now, there's another side to this conversation. There are guys that look the part.
Yeah.
I mean, well, yeah, exactly, you. There are guys that, I mean, it's just, they're built like a brick house.
Which part are we talking about? Yeah.
And then you put them out there and nothing happens.
Right.
Guys that are strong and fast, but they don't use their speed efficiently or effectively. They don't really get to going behind. Their first touch gets away from them, and you kind of go, well, that's a waste. Because you know, give me that. Give me that. I'll use it.
Yeah.
Give it to me, please. And again, it's disappointing to see the guys that are built like athletes, but don't have the touch and don't have the quality.
I saw the interview of Robertson praising Conor Bradley, specifically of his performance against Chelsea back in January. Did you guys ever get this kind of public praise from a senior teammate when you were a young player? I can't imagine you had that at Liverpool, did you see? And if someone did do an interview, they...
No, I'd be like, what do you think of him? I know, bud.
Yeah, that's the compliment. That's what you're getting. Yeah?
Yeah, that's all you get.
Nainham?
No news was good news.
Yeah.
No. No, absolutely not. Nothing in the public now. I just got on with business to whatever standards required. That was it.
There you go. That's the professional level that Nathan brings to life. Kai Havertz has stood up the task in the Premier League and the national team. Does this performance enough to convince Stevie that he's a good player?
Kai Havertz is a good player. But not as a left-hand-sided midfielder. I think we need to remember the context behind Kai Havertz. The fact that he's scoring goals now is because he's playing centre forward, which is what he was bought for when he left Germany to go to Chelsea. But he wasn't bought by, you know, Arteta was trying to be clever and thought he was getting somebody who could play in the middle of the park and go forward and put goals on the end of midfield play as well, which is not the case. Mm. He's shown he can't do that. What he's shown us now, right now, and in the last, what, 5-6 weeks when he's been scoring goals, is that his position is up front or just off the front, somewhere around there, not in the middle of the park.
For Stevie and Dan,
here we go.
Uh-oh.
Have Newcastle regressed?
Regressed.
This is going back to an argument that Stevie said they haven't regressed.
So I don't know whether you saw it. The argument was, him and Xhaka basically were saying they'd regressed. Mm. And my argument was at the time is that, you know, had they been in the position they were in when we had the argument, having had all the players, then I would agree that they've regressed. But they didn't.
What is this tier gets up?
But they didn't. They didn't. Half the team was missing. And my argument was, how can you turn round and say they've regressed when it's... when half the players are missing, that's unfair.
And where are we now, Stevie?
We're getting close to regressing. we're getting close.
But at
the time...
You could smell that coming.
But at the time, I thought it was really harsh. They had like 7 or 8 people out.
But with hindsight,
two of them were slaughtering them.
Well, we were right in the end. So there we go. They have regressed.
Squirrel and all that.
Oh, so we were right.
Squirrel and all that.
So we were right.
Squirrel.
So we're all right?
You know the squirrel story?
Yes, I know the squirrel story.
Yeah, well, there you go.
What is the squirrel story?
Well, I'll find a knot now and again, won't I?
All right, okay.
Hey, all right. I mean, all right, he gets it right now and again.
Hang on.
Yeah. I got
it. Did you see his face earlier when I was talking about Bellingham being deeper and getting in the box?
Yeah.
He's giving all that. He's fairly... you had, what are you talking about, written all over your face? And in the middle of it, he tried to custard pie me as well. Trying to give me, oh, don't be silly. And he's actually wanting the hockey. He's giving it all that.
Doesn't sound...
No, it's absolutely...
Right, we got one more question.
Oh, here we go.
Do players from rival clubs have underground social clubs? For example, a club exclusive to London players only? So if they don't mind, I'm going to twist this slightly. Could you and Everton players go out and socialise when you were playing for Liverpool, or would you have somewhere specific you knew you could do that without getting any grief?
Yes. Yeah. No, we'd go to places where everybody knew us and where we wouldn't get grief, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Does City and United players hang out, Nathan?
Well, actually, hold on a minute.
Oh, wait. There's a retraction coming, okay. Nathan. Maybe an apology.
So there was one place we would always go, right? It was the Continental.
Yes, it's the hotel.
No, it's a club.
And what was the name of the hotel that you always went to?
Holiday Inn. So the Continental...
You've been a classy.
Hello, yeah. So the Continental was one of the few places that we would both sets of players would go to.
Okay.
But we wouldn't socialise. Like you wouldn't find 3 or 4 of us standing talking to 3 or 4 of the Everton guys.
Oh.
It would be, how you doing? And then we'd be over there somewhere.
So that's completely backtracked from the story you told 2 minutes ago.
About what?
About that you two could go there and socialise together.
Oh, I didn't. Sorry, I wasn't listening to you.
Okay, good. I was too busy.
Socialized.
There we go.
Yes.
There we are.
Socialized together. No, yeah. No.
Right.
No, you would try and avoid going somewhere. If we knew they were somewhere.
Just start again.
Yeah, I wasn't listening. Sorry, I got
the. Can you repeat the question, please?
I misunderstood the question.
Too busy.
I think the question is: is there somewhere you would go not to get grief, basically? But yeah. So the fact that no, we.
You would never go drinking with Everton players. Never.
No.
Right.
No.
Okay, we got there in the end. Nathan.
Sorry, I do apologise.
Okay, so most of these players in Manchester live within probably like 2 miles of each other anyway. So they go to the same sorts of restaurants and so on. But whenever they do a team function, I think one thing that's changed across the years is most of these guys have the money and the infrastructure to just book somewhere a bit private. So yeah, they can go to the same place at the same time.
Right.
But more often than not, you know, they'll just go to somewhere just on a different day. But I'm sure they're all very social since, as I say, you knock on the door and your neighbour is like a United player and you're a City player, so realistically you can't really avoid them.
Ah, there we go. That's it. That brings us to the end of today's Extra Time. Thank you.
So you weren't hanging out with Everton players.
No, what I said was when they came in.
Thank you. Yes, more nonsense tomorrow. We'll be reflecting on the US to take on Mexico in the Nations League final and more maybe squirrel talk.